Denmark has one of the highest rates of radicalization in Europe, second only to Belgium in the number of residents per capita that leave for Syria. That's why Denmark has been experimenting with ways to prevent its Muslim citizens from joining groups like ISIS. One town is testing what may be the ultimate grassroots approach, one that fights terrorism while it rebuilds families and strengthens communities. As NPR's counterterrorism correspondent Dina Temple-Raston discovered, it's built on maternal instinct.
There's a storybook quality to the city of Odense. It sits about 2 hours west of Copenhagen and has the requisite palaces and cobbled streets you'd expect from the town that produced one of Denmark's most famous writers. Hans Christian Andersen was born here. Drive just 5 kilometers west of downtown, though, and you enter an entirely different place, an immigrant neighborhood full of cinder block buildings called Vollmose. It's a place with many of the ingredients associated with radicalization: crime, poverty, isolation, and massive unemployment. And that's where a girl, who asked that we call her Sarah, was born and raised.
Hi, nice to meet you.
We've changed her name and disguised her voice because this time last year, when she was still in school, Sarah found herself drawn to radical Islam.
There was a trend in school back then.
Last spring, between classes, one of Sarah's friends double-clicked on the video of a YouTube sensation named Yunus Kok.
Muslims in Denmark are always under suspicion. No Muslim can live in Denmark without being accused of being a terrorist.
Yunus Kok is the spokesman for the Scandinavian branch of an Islamist group called Hizbut Tahrir.
In that moment, in the classroom, I didn't really care that much about it, but afterwards I double thought about it.
While Sarah was born in Denmark and spoke perfect Danish, she had the sense, as a Muslim of Somali descent, that no matter what she did, she'd never be Danish enough.
They want us to mix
the Danish and Muslims together. They will say that we shouldn't wear our traditional clothes. We should take our scarf off, and we should be more like a Dane.
And she found herself thinking about his lectures and how they spoke to her own resentment. Sarah's story provides a rare window into the early indoctrination of a young Muslim in Denmark. People like Yunus Kok tap into the insecurities young Muslims feel as they try to find their place in the West. To hear ISIS tell it, they could find a better place for themselves in Syria. Sarah's mother overheard the rhetoric spewing out of her daughter's phone, and she called a group in Vollmose that, like her, has a delicate touch. In fact, a mother's touch. 3 dozen Somali women in brightly patterned scarves and jilbab robes began filing into a small clubhouse in the middle of Vollmose one recent evening. The women are members of a community group called Sahan, or Enduring, and I met them to try to understand what they do. The mother's work is only mothers can, to watch for subtle clues that hint at changes in the children that might also suggest that they're starting to embrace radical Islam. The night I arrived, there were trays overflowing with Somali food, hot roast chicken, rice spiced with cardamom and cloves. And I sat down with Ayan Moomin, a mother of 8 who helped found the group 6 years ago. Moomin helped transform Sahan from a group of volunteer mothers to an army of community activists. She assigns shifts to volunteers so a Sahan hotline can be answered around the clock. And no one complains because nearly all the mothers of Sahan, there are about 150 of them now, have leaned on the group at one time or another when their own children ran into trouble. They come to the clubhouse now to pay it forward.
And if a mother calls and says, I'm worried my son wants to travel to Syria,
yes,
what do you tell them to do?
We try to talk first.
That's one of the Sahan moms. And she says the talk includes questions about whether the children are dressing differently. Have they become more judgmental about religion at home? Are they spending more time alone in their rooms? These are signs that a mother would notice right away. Again, Ayan Moomin.
I don't have a script for parents. I don't tell them what to say. But when they come to Sahan asking for help, the thing that we find works best is giving the child some room after something has happened and allowing them to have some time before he or she talks about it.
That may sound crazy, to give a child room if you suspect he's flirting with ISIS, but it gives mothers the opportunity to keep a closer eye on their kids without pushing them away. Just recently, Sahan got a call about two boys who disappeared with their passports. Moomin has a protocol when this happens. She calls a contact at a social services organization in Odense called SSP, who then works with police to find the children. They found the boys several hours after Sahan made their initial call. What happened next shows just how different the Sahan mom experiment is from the way a case might unfold in this country. The kids weren't questioned by police. Instead, they were sent home.
After episodes like this, when kids are doing something that maybe they shouldn't be doing, it is very important not to start yelling at them. We find if the child is relaxed and thinks, okay, my parents aren't as mad as I thought they would be. Typically, they are so relieved they can't help but reveal to their parents what they have done.
Sahan is harnessing maternal instincts and wielding them against Islamist recruiters. That's essentially what happened in Sarah's case, the college student we met at the beginning of our story. She's still struggling to understand her attraction to Yunus Kok.
He sounds so trustworthy.
He sounds so trustworthy.
And somehow, even though he's a convert, he made her question whether she was Muslim enough.
It is not that I wanted to be a terrorist. It is not that. I just thought it was interesting what he had to say.
The Sahan mom suggested Sarah and her whole family attend a local lecture about radical Islam. She worked to find new ways to feel more comfortable about being Muslim in Denmark. Among other things, she attended a program that taught young people how to explain Islam to non-Muslims. And she began to realize that having those discussions didn't diminish her faith. It made it stronger. Sarah says she's embarrassed to talk about her radicalization now.
It is kind of hard because I wouldn't say that I was attracted to Yunus Kok in that extreme way, not at all. It was just at the moment.
Just at the moment, she says now. The Sahan experiment is working so well, it's caught the eye of people outside of Denmark, among them the U.S. attorney in Minneapolis. Jury selection begins today in this country's largest ISIS recruiting trial to date. 10 young Somali Americans have been charged with attempting to fly to Syria to join ISIS. 6 have already pleaded guilty, and 3 are standing trial. U.S. Attorney Andrew Luger has been wanting to launch a Sahan program in Minneapolis for some time. Law enforcement officials say there are literally dozens of young Minnesotans who have tried to join ISIS, and dozens more who may be planning to do so. Those numbers track with the departures seen in Denmark's two biggest cities, Copenhagen and Aarhus. But in Odense, Denmark's third largest city, not a single resident is known to have traveled to Syria. Maybe the Sahan mom stopped them before they could. Dina Temple-Raston, NPR News, Odense, Denmark.